back to Bitches on Comics. It is me, Sarah Century, and normally this is the part where I would say, and I'm here with my other host. There is no other host. It's just me. They left the child in charge. So we're about ready to go wild. And somebody who is, you know, definitely at least knows one child very well and perhaps even lives with this child. Stephanie Williams, please help me get through this conversation with your knowledge of how children work.
Yes, I will try my best. It's funny because, like, I'm no more the adult in this situation, so it's really, we are really running the risk of burning the house down. But it's okay, because I think someone should have some homeowner's insurance, I hope.
Yeah, mom left $20 and we're going to get pizza.
Yes, and a babysitter will not be dead.
The babysitter, nope, don't tell mom. The babysitter is dead. Flashback to that movie, because what a masterpiece. But, I think the words "I'm right on top of that, Rose" go through my head maybe 700 times a year. Well, we aren't here necessarily to talk about "Don't Tell Mom the Babysitter's Dead." We might get back to it. Who knows? But for now, you know, Stephanie Williams, we know you so well. It's been a while since you've been on the podcast. But, of course, anybody who wants to look through our archive will notice that Stephanie has been on so many episodes of Bitches on Comics. And they're some of the most greatest, I was going to say absolute bangers. And for some reason, I was like, is that okay to say on air? And then I was like, yes, it is. But you've been here and you work on comics frequently. And I would just like to hear some of the stuff that you've done lately. But, you know, we first started talking to you when you were working at Fangirl. So there's like a whole trajectory.
It's a whole weird road, which whenever someone is like, hey, how did you get into like writing comics professionally? I'm just like, to be honest, I don't even know. I feel like I was like on my way to Walgreens and then accidentally walked into Walmart to start with a W. But that's kind of what it feels like. Because talking about comics in a very unserious, sometimes serious way. Yeah. To memeing and all of that. And then not getting sued by Marvel when I did Living Heroes. Which, I mean, knock on wood, that still doesn't happen. But like, I just kind of got here. And it's been, I was going to say that it's been a journey. And it has. It's been fun. But it's also been a bit of a learning curve, to be quite honest. Writing is hard. I feel like that shouldn't be, like, any kind of writing is hard. Even, like, the emails are hard.
Yeah.
So sometimes sending a text is hard.
Sending text is hard. I know. It's very hard. I was just thinking about that. I was like, what do I say in this text even? How do I say it? Because you have to say it differently than how you talk. So it's, like, already...
You do. And like, so that someone doesn't like misconstruct it. I mean, like, just take it the wrong way, but they probably still will.
They like, will tweets. Anyway.
They will. So
doesn't matter what you try.
It doesn't. But the last time I think I was here, like, I was in a thick of Nubia, and that wrapped up last summer, right? Yeah, last summer. I think Nubia Queen of the Amazons issue 4 came out either August or September. I'm sorry, y'all. I do not remember. It's all a blur. But there are two hardcovers available for both, which is really cool.
Oh, they're gorgeous. They're so pretty.
They're cute. They are. And it's just something that, I don't know, like, even when I was writing at Fangirls, like, if you said, hey, Steph, you're going to be, like, writing Kate comics for the big two, and I'm like, you are funny, because probably not. Like, they would give me, like, maybe I might end up in an anthology, and it'll be like, yeah, so never using that email address again. But thankfully, that did not happen. And since I've been doing some other stuff, I have been working on adapting The Raven Cycle, which, wow. I don't read a lot of YA, not because I don't like it, but because I'm a mom and those kids, they stress me out. And I just feel like I fuss like a mom when I'm like either reading these books or listening to them. And the Raven Cycle has been no different because these kids in this damn forest and and this king, this Welsh king that they're looking for, or yeah, trying to find and waking up the damn ley line and all that. I was like, I really wish that y'all would go sit down somewhere. But you're not going to sit down somewhere.
Oh, no. They're on a quest. This is adventure time.
Yes. They're on a quest. It was funny because then I was adapting book two. I don't want to say it was a secret gay because, like, it's been hinted at since book one, but there was a secret gay and I was like, wait, what? So that got me. I was like, oh, well, that's fun. And what a twist. Like, I'm in now. So it's been a really fun experience because graphic novels and comics are the same and not the same. Like, they're both fruits, but they're not both apples. Apples and oranges, truly. So I've been working on that, and I've gotten to do some Infinity Comics, which have been really fun. Yeah. So that's Marvel's Vertical, which I really like, because one, they're quick, and they're closer to what I kind of got my start at, which was doing, like, one-page web comics and stuff. Mm-hmm. So condensing a story and trying to tell it in 36 pages total with either, it went from being 6 panels per page to 5. I just recently worked on something, and I think I can bring it up because it'll be out by the time this episode airs, but I worked on Little Rocket. Mm. So they were like, hey, you want to do a Muffet Baby style story on Half World? And I was like, I absolutely
Oh
do.
My God.
So I went back, and I read that Rocket miniseries from, I think, the 80s. Sarah, if you have not read that, you need to
read it. I don't think I have. I'm trying to, like, Google it right now because I'm like, what is this?
You need to read it because it is insane. And like, so like I read that and got my inspiration from there. And then like watching, I think it's, the show's called Popoyo, which is like cartoon on Netflix that my son watches like before he falls asleep because like they don't talk. They just make little noises. So I was like, well, same thing. It's nice to write a comic where I don't have to write dialogue.
Yeah.
It's the best thing in the world. So between that and reading that far out of control, someone's definitely on LSD Rocket miniseries from the 80s. So that was really fun. The Family Snick.
Yes, really that's what I was going to say.
Yeah, to kind of like do this Marvel version of National Lampoon's Vacation, which... I never need an excuse to watch those movies, but when I was asked about that, I was like, ooh, I guess I'm going to do a little marathon.
The Vegas Vacation, I remember whenever that actually came out, because I think that that showed up in the late 90s.
Yeah, it sure did. 97 to be exact. I don't know why I know that exactly, but it did.
You're like, I know where I was at whenever this movie premiered.
I actually do. because I had a serious crush on because they kept like changing the kids each and every movie.
That's
so
right.
So on Aubrey or whatever, and there's a scene when she's dancing on I think like one of the signs or something like that. And my mom was like, you keep rewinding that. Why? And I was like, I really like the music.
This is great, great music. And I just want to keep watching the music. Listening. Yeah.
So I needed no excuse to go back and watch all of those. And I tried to get through Europe and I don't know why. I think I have no idea why I don't. I just do not like that one like that. But Christmas Vacation, Vegas Classic. Vacation, and that first one, like I can watch those all day long. And then I tried to watch the remake or the updated one with... the guy from like the last two or three seasons of The Office. And I tried to watch that one and you know, it's fine. I think Chris Hemsworth is in that one too.
What?
Being funny. Yeah, it's so random.
Yeah.
I think he's in that one being pretty funny actually. But I was like, yeah, I'm good. And then I watched Beethoven because Jonathan. It's like, I need animal influence here. And Logan does not care for Jonathan. The same way the dad didn't care for Beethoven at first.
So yep, like, okay. Yep. But he grows to accept Beethoven.
Yes. Sounds like all the movies that are streaming currently, I will watch them. So that was just really fun. And Gabby's a treat.
I can only imagine. The dialogue just has to write itself with Gabby, because what a funny person.
Yes.
What a funny clone.
Yeah, and just the fact that, like, he has all these children. It wasn't even all his kids. It was just, like, the main ones that Marble was like, hey, y'all are important, so we shall prop you up, because we always need to have Wolverine books out.
Yes.
Because, like, that is what it boils down to. But that was really
regardless of the book, they're like, get on in here, you, over to Lake Logan.
Like, wait, you, I'm sorry, do you have one claw or two claws that pop out? It doesn't matter. Just get over here. Like, you have feet claws, too? Great.
The right on over. Feet claws. Yes. Nothing better. Nothing better.
So, like, that was fun. And then I think I did a Lunella, a Moon Girl story, but I got to include Shuri in that. And it's just them playing video games. Because I'm like, you know, these are two, you know, Black girls who are, like, uber smart. And we always see them doing, like, just extraordinary things or whatever. And I was like, well, let them do something ordinary. And, like, let's have Lunella get stuck in a video game. So that was pretty fun and cool. Because I was also working on something else that allowed me to watch the Moon Girl series, animated series, like months before everyone else, which sucked. No, I loved it. I love it. I've watched it now, but I'm saying it sucked because I can talk about it with
anyone,
but my son. Because my son, Micah, is like, wait, like, why is your entire name on the TV? I'm like, it is called a screener. So that is the corporation's way of tracking mommy, so that if she decides to, like, upload this to the internet, she will get sued to the high heavens. And you, even if you wanted to go to college, you would not be able to go to college anymore.
So, yeah. It's the kind of thing where you're just like, it will actually be like I committed a murder, actually.
Yes. Because you'll be visiting me in jail. So, but he was really good about it. He waited until Moon Girl debuted and everything. And then he was like, I can finally talk about it at school, right? Like, absolutely can. So the fun thing about writing comics, and then, like, people who only really know comics through the MCU, not even through, like, the DCEU, but, like, through the MCU, is that you get asked, like, hey, are you going to the red carpet? And the ugliest laugh, because do how much time
they don't
you
want
have
me there.
Because they don't want me there. They don't want anyone there. The folks whose, you know, stories and stuff that they've, like, repurposed or whatever to, like, put on the screen, they don't even want them there. They barely want to pay them. So, no, I will not be at the Wakanda Forever.
red carpet event.
Yes. Yeah. Someone definitely asked me that. And I'm like, no. After I laughed for 5 minutes.
After you laughed and then cried a little bit, and then we're just like, you know what, I'm gonna donate $5 to this union, and, like, that's basically how it goes, right? Because that's and I'm gonna say that applies to pretty much everything right now, where it's just like, ugh, well, go strikes, because here we are.
Yeah, because, like, so I guess we can talk about this because it's relevant and related, but with the writer's strike. And I just read something recently where, like, the studios were saying, like, viewers won't actually notice any difference for a while. And I'm like, well, that sucks, because that means that you all are basically possibly waiting for how long writers can hold off without work.
Mm-hmm.
So that's fun.
I saw, too, that one of the things that they're trying to pull is we're going to hire writers back when the strike's over to rewrite our AI scripts. And it's just like, Sarah. You know what you could do? And it's like, shoot yourself into the sun, actually. Because, like, no, nobody is going to do that for you. That's absolutely bonkers that you would even think that that was a normal thing or a workable thing. It's going to cost you more than anything. But that's kind of been the delight of the modern era, is just watching corporations kind of shoot themselves in the foot, like again and again and again, and being like, why don't we have any money? And then all of us get laid off. So it sucks. Like, it's, it directly affects our livelihood. Yes. But at the same time, you're just like, that's hilarious that you all thought what did you think was going to happen? But like, they don't, because they're like, I own a cell phone company. Like, comics don't make sense to me. Books don't make sense to me. You know, movies don't really make sense to me outside of like, I see like figures and, you know, merchandising deals and like, you know, that kind of stuff. And you're just like, man, it's kind of rough, but you know, that's choke point capitalism. Like, that's kind of just like where we've gotten ourselves. Right. And you know what? I think this WGA is going to be successful. I think we're going to be.
Yes, it better be. We collectively do, because it's just so weird that you want to automate creativity.
Yeah. That's the only thing we like doing. Like, right. That's the thing. Is like, they're like, now this will free up your time to do bullshit work. And you're just like, none of us want to do that. We want to do art. Like, shut up.
Like, what are you?
You're
talking?
Ruining
like,
everything.
Yes.
Art is the only thing that makes us happy. Like, it's the only thing. Whenever I was a kid going through my worst times of my life, what did I love the most? Comic books. Like,
yes.
With that, you can't AI that. Like, it's not even AI. It's just an algorithm. You all are just exaggerating. You're not there yet. You're acting like you are, you know.
So bad, because I'm someone who I'm like, no, I want to go see what it is that they're doing and like why they think it works. So
right,
I checked out ChatGPT and Sarah.
I know. It's painful.
If someone handed in a comic script that was written with ChatGPT, it would absolutely look like it was written by ChatGPT.
Oh my God.
Which is crazy, because like, you could do a better job, I don't know, like plagiarizing by actually just searching, you know what I mean? Like searching the internet and like looking for quotes or just like whatever, and then do, mm-hmm. I don't know, like, just being a scumbag that way. But like,
yeah,
ChatGPT in no way, like you said, it's an algorithm. Like, it is just, yeah, pretty, it's like expecting Grammarly to like write
your
a novel
dog,
for
right?
you.
Yeah. Because like, it's like, okay, but Grammarly is wrong about like half of the things,
yes,
that it tells
about
me.
The grammar.
And it's like, listen, no knock to Grammarly, because you've saved my life many times, but that's it. AI is an assistance, is a tool that can help you. It's not the thing that does the whole job, because you need a human being to do that. And it's like, that's not even like, you know what? I personally welcome our AI overlords. Like, that's how I am. I'm always like, you know what? If that's the way it's got to be, that's the way it's got to be. I saw iRobot. It's fine. But that's not effective right now. We don't have AI that can do that. You know, like, I can't just kick back. But then also, it's like, you just want art to make money, but that's it. Like, you're trying to cut like the expense of actually paying people. But that's the only thing you view art as, is something that makes money for you. Like, for years, we've seen these like franchises just be like, just endless, because, you know, investing in new things is risky, and because like this and this and this. And it's like, in that way, the banks are already making all of our decisions for us, all of the time anyway. So it's like, that sucks, but that's it. Is like, this is a great thing for people to get actually around and be like, you know what? I'm not going to live like that, actually. Like, we're going to start needing that, you know, the people who are making these things to make a living wage. And it's like, nobody's asking for more than a living wage, which is wild too, because it's just like
the bare minimum to make you laugh, which is really hard.
It's hard. And it's like, even if it was easy, even if I dialed it in, sometimes you dial it in when you're working at the restaurant that day. Sometimes you dial it in whenever you're, I don't know, a CEO. Like, they dial it in their whole lives and get paid wild amounts of money to do it. So it's like, well, here's my thing. Like,
yes, and like you're absolutely right. It's you people who terrible writers should be paid what they need. Like, everyone should be paid what they need to be paid, because at the very end of the day, like, you are still getting a product out of this, and no one told anyone to make things cost money. But here we are. And it's just like, I recently watched the newer Dredd. So the Judge Dredd remake.
Like,
and
it was like 2010 or something, 2012.
Yeah. One of those, around the time we were doing a thing like, hey, mutants and telepaths, like, let's put this in a story. It kind of works. But yeah. It was just really weird watching it, though, because like they had these towers, which were basically like these apartment communities, or this one in community inside of like this really big giant tower, because of like wars and whatnot, the cursed earth, so on and so forth. But I'm like, you know, I can't really enjoy this like I used to, because like we're on our way there. Like, I can see a Tesla building.
You're right.
Which, I mean, God bless any soul that, God damn any soul that is in something like that. You're definitely going to be on fire. You will wake up and the whole entire building will be on fire. But like, just watching stuff like that, it's just like, yeah, well, you want to automate everything all the way down to creativity. Like, this is where we're headed in some way. Like, of course, not to that degree, but some kind of way. Because no, I don't want more time to wash the dishes. That is why we have dishwashers, so that I do not have to spend that much time.
Right.
Sometimes I will hand wash dishes, because I'm just like, you know what? I'm feeling a little risky today. Let me go ahead and do that.
And you know what? Dishwashers actually don't get them as clean as your regular process. So again, automation fails us at every turn. You know, it's fine, because technology really should be making our lives easier, but obviously by making our jobs like useless and unpaid doesn't make our lives easier.
It helps no one, because who's going to buy the things that you're trying to sell if no one has the money?
Yeah.
And that's the thing that doesn't make any sense.
But that's choke point capitalism, because it's like they eliminate, like, capitalism, in order to be like a good thing, right, would have to be like, there'd have to be a lot of competition. Like, you'd have to have like a lot of businesses. But the end result of capitalism is that it will always narrow down to just a few businesses, because obviously we have antitrust laws, but those have been taking a nap for like, I don't know, 50 years, because they just kind of decided to stop enforcing them. Because of corrupt politicians, which is always going to be something that happens. Like, you know, it's just like these kind of power systems that exist, and you're just like, but it's always going to lead to this. It's like always going to get to this place, because, you know, choke point capitalism is basically the fact that we only have a few things, and then those businesses in our whole society, our whole quality of life goes down. Because it's only a few businesses. And so capitalism isn't at that point even working effectively by its own rules or laws. So
yes. It's
just kind of like, honestly, you know what? We're here to talk about comics. But
yeah,
that's the thing is like, but talking about this is talking about comics,
it is.
You know, because like a lot of comics creators are worried if they're even going to be able to keep doing it right now because of stuff like this. So,
well, IDW.
Yeah, the IDW thing is devastating.
It is. I was in the middle of working on a project with them.
Oh, no.
And yeah, so the editors that I'm working with, like, they were not affected. But another editor who I wanted to work with on originals, Megan Brown, she was let go. That sucked immensely. Just not even on a personal note, but like for Megan, because like she's a really great editor. They let go of their entire marketing team. And it's just like, who's selling your books?
That's not a good move. Like,
what?
Because they're like, oh, we're going to try to recuperate and grow. And it's like, how are you going to grow without a marketing team? Like, that's wild.
Because like, and that's the other thing too, because thinking that because of social media influencers and stuff like that, like you could just do that and you'll be fine. And no, you won't, because it doesn't work like that. Maybe you have a one-off here and there where, I don't know, somebody gets lucky with a social media post, and it goes viral. But there's still like formulas to that.
Even and in there's instances. Like a whole lot of people on social media, yes. right? So like, yeah, of course, every now and again, something will go yes. off. Because we were raised, like I'm saying, we were raised as if we were children when we worked for sci-fi, but in some ways we were, right?
Yeah.
But it's like, even though we were both like in our 30s, right? But it's like, yeah, in some ways children still, because yeah. we've both learned a lot since then, I think. But something about working at sci-fi was we had the benefit of a really talented social media person.
Absolutely.
And, you know, she was able to just engage people on this level that I really just don't see any magazines doing right now. And nope. was always pulling people in, interacting, talking it out. Like, there was a lot of engagement.
Yes.
So seeing that we know something that took from nothing to something because of that engaging social media presence, I think it's, for me, and like, I don't know, maybe for you as well, where you kind of look at stuff now and you're like, yeah, your social media, your marketing is like not there because you're good at doing like an ad or you're good at doing this or that, but you don't have that interactive presence, right?
Yeah, you don't have it because you don't want to either hire somebody for it or you mm-hmm. maybe have hired somebody and you're severely underpaying them.
Yeah.
Because it's not just tweets. It's not just TikToks. It's not just Instagram Reels. Like, actual thought has to be put into it so that you can, again, like, get that engagement and have somebody workshop it.
Yeah.
Because, like, even, I guess, bringing this back to comics, that is something that I have learned that is very irritating, is that it's not even just comics. I think this is across the board for, like, just writers in general and having to, like, be your own marketer. Because mm-hmm. even if you do have, you know, like this bigger company behind you, if you're not writing on a tentpole book or like just a tentpole property, you're not getting that social media backing. Like, it's on you.
Yeah, 100%.
And it's just like, well, the books didn't sell. Well, the books didn't sell because like, it was just there's no marketing. Like, what do you mean? Like, of course, a book like, I don't know, like Nightwing, the X books, like they're going to do Batman.
They'll always buy.
Someone's always going to buy that. But like, if you have your own indie situation, you got to market. And I think that's a thing that I don't want to say that people don't take in consideration when wanting to, you know, pursue writing professionally, but like, that's a very real thing. Even at conventions, I'm like, wow, thank God I was like a waitress for 2 years because
yeah,
it's like, one, I know how to deal with just do the whole customer service thing and like kind of, you know, deal with folks, be it great customers, terrible customers, in between customers,
yeah,
or whatever. But I can only imagine though, like if I had just like never had a job outside of comic writing or just comic writing. I don't know how that would look. To be honest, like I personally don't think I would have lasted very long at all because there are so many other skill sets that you need. I will say that you need just so that you can have somewhat of a good time. Because I've been at conventions and I've like gone to some folks' tables and I'm just like, I mean, you're kind of scaring the customers off because like you're yeah. a bit of a jerk. It's not enough that you have this, it should be. Well, no, it kind of isn't. You should still kind of be like a okay person, but
you, like, you have to be among the people, right? As a creator, pretty much in a way.
Yes.
Like, you certainly have to listen and engage with others. It is part of the gig, kind of. And I think a lot of creators will have these moments where they're like, okay, I can do this and be engaged, and then I need to take like 3 months of like not talking to anybody, right?
Yes, which is
and
fair.
Like that's fair and fine and good, actually. Like, take every minute of time you need, and if conventions stress you out, that's okay. Like, it's yeah. okay to be stressed, but you know, it's something that, yeah, as you say, you kind of do have to put on your game face, because a lot of the people who you're going to encounter, like, you, there's no control over those interactions. Mm-hmm. Like, no. You have no idea what person's going to walk up to your table. They have no idea about you half the time. And, you know, that's just kind of one of those things where it's like your people skills, as you say, working at a restaurant. I was a barista for years.
Oh, and I will. I know. Like, your people skills are up there, like,
because they were at 6 o'clock in the morning, oh, too, right? Because so it would be like you're making like, and I was a barista in a few different towns, but one of them was Los Angeles, which is like the worst place to be a barista because every person is just like, I'm in a hurry. How fast can you make this completely ridiculous drink with like 70 different specifications? And it's just like, okay, just order your drink. It'll go faster that way. You don't have to tell me why you're important. Because guess what? Everybody is equally important in the coffee line. That's absolutely just kind of how it is.
No, NYCC was an experience. I had a great time, but like busy every single day. I don't think I only left my table either for like if I had a panel that day or literally used the bathroom or if I had like a break. But I was there the entire time and it was really fun engaging with folks because online can, even though you're online and you're exposed to so many different people, it can still feel very insular, I guess, in a very weird way. But like being out in the real world and like having FaceTime with folks that either don't even have social media, but somehow have found you and your work. It's great. Like that's the thing that when I'm like, I want to flip my laptop or throw it out the window, like those are the interactions that I think about that remind me like, oh no, like I like this is like it's fine. Like this is frustrating, but also there are rewarding moments. Except for when this guy asked me if Nubia was one, a character that I made up, and two, did I know that I can get in trouble for using DC's logo? He was very serious, which was crazy. Because I was sitting with comic book sketch art and they have like this whole convoy of tables at conventions. Like I liken them to, and they're not at all evil, but it just makes me think of like Twister. And it was like the competition to Helen Hunt and them because they had those really nice trucks. But so I think of them like that. But, you know, I'm in this whole convoy of artists and writers that I'm pretty sure this person was like aware of. I'm like, okay, so one, we're at NYCC. Two, why would I risk like someone coming over from DC or whatever and being like, hey, this book, we didn't license this. Like, are you nuts?
Yeah, I know. I don't think I've ever just walked up to somebody who had DC on the cover of their book and was like, where'd this come from? Like, you're doing something illegal. Like, I don't know. Like, it seems like a pretty broad leap there. Yeah. Also, I mean, that was like kind of, maybe only in my friend group, but I remember that being a pretty huge book whenever it was coming out. So
yes.
It's like, no, you don't read comics. You don't read comics. Like, it's fine.
No, the folks who are, I've found, who often have a lot to say really actually don't read them or haven't read them in a really long time, which is so interesting, but
oh, and then the people who are like, oh, do you even read comics? And I'm like, you have no idea. Like, you just don't know.
Like,
and
you would be grossed out if you knew.
I'm not saying it as like a brag because it's not a brag. Trust me.
No.
That I've read every issue of Alpha Flight more than once. That's not a brag, okay? It's just it happened. It just happened. And like now we have to live with the consequences of me being a huge nerd that read all those comics. You know, like, I don't know.
I also read all of Alpha Flight just once.
Yeah.
But then I'm just like, ooh, I think I kind of want to write Puck. So that's what came out of.
Listen, I want to write Aurora. Like, I'm just let a lesbian write Aurora. Yes. Like, please. Like, if anybody should, it should be a lesbian, I think, at this point. It's like Barbara Minerva, where I'm like, well, not quite like Barbara Minerva, but where you're just like, look, just let a lesbian writer eventually. Like, I guess, like, she has been written occasionally by lesbians.
Yeah, but she should always be.
But she should have often, at least often.
Because, I mean, like, because what are we doing here?
Yeah, I know. I'm just like, Puck is actually really fun. I was talking to Spencer Ackerman.
Yeah.
Like, we became friends because he just hit me up and was like, hey, you want to, like, Spencer's talk about really Alpha Flight cool. or whatever?
Yeah.
Yeah, and I was like, yeah, I do want to talk about Alpha Flight. So, like, it turned into this conversation of just being like, wasn't that stuff with Puck so, like, weirdly offensive, but we love him also yeah. somehow? And, like, that's basically the story of Alpha Flight, right? Like, that was offensive, but I love you. I don't know why or how, yeah, but I just
I got to that. And I was like, oh, wait, what?
Yeah. With Puck especially, right? Like, about halfway through the series, you're like, Bill Mantlo, what are you doing? And that's and speaking as somebody who generally is like, I'm so pro Bill Mantlo, right? Like, a lot of his work I think is great.
Yeah.
His Hulk run is incredible, et cetera, et cetera. But yeah, you have this moment of like in Alpha Flight where you're reading and then you're like, I don't think this doesn't seem like it's going in a good place. Like, we gotta
but you know what? I am thankful for those moments when I come across them in comics because, yes, even though I write them, like, I still read them. And now mm-hmm. when I read them, just, like, when I read something, I'm like, ooh, I don't, like, I'm not sure why they did that, but they did it. I think back, I'm like, okay, well, I should stop stressing about this one thing that I'm doing because it's nowhere near whatever this is.
Chances are it's not gonna read like that.
No.
I think I'm like, doing great.
I'm like, it's okay. It's perfectly fine. Because even like doing research yeah. for like that DC, well, the name of the book originally was Hell Yeah Peacemaker in a long sentence after that. I don't remember. But I changed the name because DC was like, well, we don't want to overpromise on the amount of Peacemaker in this book. And I'm like, you're not overpromising anything, but okay. Just as long as you all send the book to print, that's fine by me. So it survived and made it to print. But it's called Strange and Unsung All-Stars of the DC Multiverse. And it's a visual encyclopedia. It'll be out November 7th. You can pre-order it now wherever you pre-order your books.
Yeah.
But Sarah, wow, what a trip that book, writing that book was. Because first I have to say, and this is no shade to Marvel at all, because I love Marvel's cosmic side. But wow, mm-hmm. DC's cosmic side of their universe is
developed like actually very developed.
Yeah, I mean, in a way that is almost very scary because
yeah,
just the Legion of Superheroes alone and the different planets and like the breakdowns for the planets and like why the folks are the way that they are, the new god stuff.
Marvel is like, oh, we've got another planet. Yeah. And you're like, what? And then it's just like, yeah, Mutant X is going to run 25 issues and it's going to never be mentioned again. And you're like, okay. Yes. Like, it's always something like that. And then with DC, they're like, no, this like random reference from a comic in like 1940 is coming back in a big way this year. Like, you're just like, you know what? I'm here for it.
Yeah, like, I believe you.
Hello there.
Oh, hi.
How are you doing today?
Well, I just took the biggest drink of coffee, but I think you already knew that.
Well, that's great. Well, I'm here just to talk about, you know, how great our Patreon is.
What's so great about it?
Well, we talk about a host of things, whether it be comics, movies, people we don't like, people we love, animals that we're obsessed with, favorite colors, sometimes.
Pretty recently, we did the Star Trek Christmas special, which was fun because it turns out there's no Christmas in Star Trek, but there is a Christmas Carol. So that was fun.
That was pretty fun, but I think it was kind of a psyop.
Most of our Patreon specials are maybe psyops. We have the X-Men specials that I've been doing with Priya. And yeah, there's endless, honestly, just endless, so many others, 1 billion different things that you could listen to on our Patreon. And if you want to go there today, then you could go to patreon.com/queerspec. And there are many different tiers to sign up for. However, if you sign up for any tier, you get everything because we're commies.
Communism is good, kids. Always remember.
Tune in for our next Patreon special, the commie special. Okay, let's not even play, because this is my favorite era. Like, this is the stuff that I love the most, because this whole Earth 2, Earth 3, you know, like, these are the things that I love about comics, where you're like, oh, we're three, in like four, different world five, now. Six. Yeah.
Because, like, even so the whole, wow, so the crisis events. Mm-hmm. I have crisis PTSD because I
can only
had
imagine.
Not realized, Sarah, like, I, at one point, I was like, if I see the word crisis, I am going to scream at the top of my lungs. Because
I will have a crisis.
It was just a lot.
It will be my final crisis.
But like the first time around when they did it, it was very interesting because a lot of the characters that they bought from other companies, Peacemaker included, it was a way to kind of like shoehorn in some of those characters. So like that was fun to kind of discover. What else? Black Racer. Because
love Black
Jack
Racer,
Kirby,
right?
I mean, it took me. So like that is something I had to spend like a few days with because it was just so dense.
Yeah.
And just like the whole like. How does the Black Racer exist and like what it means and like it was just a lot. So it took me a little while to like write that in a way that didn't make people feel like their brains were gonna explode.
Yeah, I mean, that's the New Gods, right? Like that's pretty much the whole thing. And that's why I mean, results vary, right? But I will say that people have really struggled to follow up on the New Gods in a way that I think is compelling as the original stuff, because you're always like, yeah, I see this like spin that you're doing or something, right? And it can be really fun because you're like, ooh, this is a fun reference or whatever. But there's just something so bonkers about those original Jack Kirby comics. I have like the box set upstairs, actually, and it's beautiful. And there's just so many ideas like flying out like at every page that you're just like, no kidding, people can't replicate this. This is like an idea machine. Like this, there's just like everything that's like coming out of this is just like, you know, every third page, my mind is totally blown by something that I just read. And that's kind of, you know, it's like Kirby's pinnacle in a way. But it's also like kind of the downside because it made it be like very difficult to follow up on in a way that feels true to the original premise, because to follow up on it, you're automatically doing a spin on something else. Whereas Kirby was doing a spin on basically stuff that he had been already doing for and like, you know, it's Kirby spinning Kirby, basically.
Which I can't follow that up.
I can't follow like, it.
No, because like even trying to talk about it. I mean, even Kirby had nothing to do with Brother Geek or whatever, or Power something, who I thought was actually a brother. He's not.
Yeah.
He's a doll.
I mean, he
like
is
a mannequin,
a doll.
Whatever. But even that was like wild because Rachel Pollack wrote. It was like a one-off. It was like a one-shot situation with the character, and that is dense.
Yeah.
I had to read that several times to like really take what she was putting to take away what she was putting down. So
right,
we can talk about it effectively with people. But like, I know a lot of folks say that comics are more progressive now, and I would almost argue. Maybe not. Because there's a lot of older stuff that I ended up reading while doing this where I was just like, oh my God, they let this happen? Like, did they know this was going on? Like, who, like, where was this printed? Because I can't believe they actually were able to write this, even the stuff with Jet. So the Guardians, not the Guardians, is it the Guardians of the Globe?
The blue. Giant head guys.
Yeah, that came to Earth and was like, hey, we're gonna make like 7 or 8 humans into like superheroes or whatever.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I love this. This is so ridiculous. Yeah.
But like even the character Jet, so she's a Jamaican woman who is in London, I believe, and like Batman and Superman had to come and convince her to like, I don't know, like become a superhero. And she's like, okay, Reagan gives a speech, which was supposed to be the thing that like, not necessarily inspired her, but like made her feel okay with like trusting superheroes again. I was like, that is a lie, but okay.
That is wild. And Reagan is in too many comics, in my humble opinion.
Too many?
I think I was just reading like a Booster Gold comic and I was like, man, people really viewed this guy in a very different light whenever he was like actually president, I think, because now we're all like, no. No to that man, you know, like boo this man.
But no, like Reagan was everywhere. But like writing about her because during the time that the Guardians of the Globe was happening, they also took on the AIDS epidemic, which I mean, some of the stuff is just, it did not, well, it wasn't great then and definitely didn't age real well. Like them getting HIV being transmitted to them via a villain named the Hobgoblin or something like that. It's a
isn't it like the Hobgoblin? Hemogoblin, right?
Because yes, that's the like Hemogoblin, which
it's like a that's rough stuff.
Yeah,
it's like, and I was like, you know, for effort, I guess. Like, there's times where I'm like, you know what? Like, the legacy virus is messy as hell. Like, you kind of have these things where you're like, at least somebody was trying to talk about it. This is awful, but like at least somebody was trying, I guess.
Like an A for, not even an A, but like you get a C.
Z for effort.
Yes, because you try. But like even with her, when I went and I read it, and I was just like, you know, that part aside, because it's Jet and there's two other characters who also contract HIV. She's the only one whose HIV goes into full-blown AIDS. But it's actually handled pretty all right as far as like them having to deal with people being terrible towards them, as a lot of people were towards folks in the LGBTQ community, specifically gay men. So like they do a pretty good job of showing that. But, you know, it's superheroes having to deal with this. Right. I think they go to like a Green Lantern planet or something. But it's like the one, he's kind of given, Feral Pig a little bit, but not necessarily. Yeah. He's pink, but like, he's kind of like a big guy. He's a big guy, but he's a big guy who's actually really like a softie or whatever.
Yeah.
So he's like trying to help, Jed, and it just doesn't work out. So like her last act of heroism is like basically keeping off an alien invasion, which, does it suck that this Black woman like died but then was brought back in the comic? Sure. But I thought that was, if you read the story all her story up until that point, when you get to it, it's like, actually no, this makes sense for this character, and it's actually pretty darn good. So originally, they were not going to let me write about her because they wanted to stay away from that. But I'm like, no,
right.
I'm actually trying to tell you all that this story that you're scared of getting backlash for is actually a story that, even though it has its problems, is still a very important story.
Right.
And one that was, someone tried, like they really did try to write the best that they could at the time. So not to excuse what their stumbles, but someone did it.
We end up doing that a lot with comics, right? Because that's kind of the thing, is that comics are really put in this unique position of being a media that pretty much anybody can pick up. And so, you know, like, especially back in like the 70s, 80s, you know, whenever it was on the newsstand. So, you know, recently, Connor Goldsmith and I were talking about Madeline Pryor and the Genosha arc. And, that turns into a mess, right? In some ways. But then you're also like, yeah, but nobody was talking about like apartheid. So it's like, yes, is it a messy metaphor for apartheid? Yeah. Totally. But like at that time, American complicity in apartheid was like this huge like unspoken thing that people weren't really tackling in mainstream media as much, right? And so it's like you have to be like, good effort, you know, great job. And then like in some ways it gives us really great stories. It doesn't mean that you just go like, oh, well, it's not problematic at all, you know, or something. Or yeah. Like, oh, that aged perfectly. It's like it ages pretty well for the time, right? Like, mm-hmm. But, it, you know, you can say stuff like that and be like, you know, here's why that's not great. But there's something wonderful about being able to do that and like to be at a place yes. in history where it's like we can look back at that and be like, that's why that wasn't great, or like that was a thing that we don't think anymore or something. But in the time of AIDS, like that was something that mm-hmm. there was so much misinformation around it that people tackling it at all is something yeah. that I wouldn't say is necessarily inherently like a good thing, but I would say that at least showing sympathy, because whenever I was a kid, like I didn't hear good things about people with AIDS, right? Like you hear yeah. bad things, and there's like, you know, there's something to be said about comics being something where like literally any person can pick it up. And even if it's like just absolutely bonkers missteps, like the whole way, like they are at least sympathizing and you're like, okay, at least I can work with that. I'm not saying it's perfect. I'm saying I can work with it, right?
Absolutely. And then too, like you said, it's a privilege to even like be in a space where you can be like, hey, this doesn't work. Because it's easier, like in hindsight is everything. So like if the story is even, you know, 60% pretty good, then to me, like that's a win. And that's somebody who like was, they really tried to do the best with what they had. I mean, heck, even the Avengers tackling, I don't even think they tackled affirmative action. They just happened to like incorporate it into several stories, with Sam Wilson becoming a member mm-hmm. of the Avengers for the first time, as the Avengers happened to like meet their affirmative action quota because Black Panther was like, yeah, I got to go back home. I'm actually a king.
And it's so messy, but it's like, it's also like, you know what? I mean, I don't know. Like they're doing something.
Yeah. And I mean, to be honest, I feel like whether it was intentional or not, the way that it was handled or the characters were written were still very true to how folks reacted to affirmative mm-hmm. action. So
and continue to, right?
Yeah. And continue to. So like even like Tony Stark being like, we have enough diversity, like Beast is on here, like mutants totally, like we have Wanda and we have Beast.
We like, have Wanda mean, and Beast, know? And you're just like, okay, but yes. we need some people who don't commit war crimes every weekend. Like, yes. like I love those characters, right? But like, chill.
Like, come on, man. So like that and like Hawkeye being pissed because Sam is like taking a spot and he's like, he just talks to birds. I'm like, okay, but you don't shoot arrows. You're very accurate at what you do.
Yeah.
But you also, like, he, could he fly then? Yeah, he could fly then because by then he had gotten his wings. So I'm like, he can fly. You can't fly.
He's
so
got
like,
one up on you, Clint.
Like, and he could talk to birds. So like that, I don't know, like that, you really don't have a leg to stand on there, but sure. But like, yeah, but like, it's fun. Like that's another, like it's more than just one comic issue. But like, over the course of I think 7 or 8 comic issues, you know, 60%. I would even give them 70%.
Yeah, yeah, it's at times like, definitely.
Hey, like you all, you tackled this and it turned out all right. Now, when they did it again in the 90s, I don't know what happened.
You're like, okay, hey, it's the 90s now. we have a lot less tolerance for this now.
Yes, because I'm like, what is this?
I think about Avengers Valkyrie and how, like, whenever you read that stuff, like back in the day, 70s, like Roy Thomas stuff, you know, come on in, Wasp, the revolution's fine, like those comics. Yes. And I think that, but that's the thing is like Roy Thomas is being a jerk to feminists, like he's being an asshole. Like if you read those early Valkyrie appearances, it's all like, let's kill all the men and like, you know, all mm-hmm. goofy. And then they're like, oh, little ladies, like you should never have wanted equal rights or something at the end of the story. But it's always like what I see in that story is I'm like, Valkyrie showed up. she wrecked some shit. It was rad. I love her, you know? So it's like my takeaway can be different than what the writer intended, because the writer is really just being like, this is not what I think is good. And like, I'm going to make it be this like frivolous, like feminism, because I like, you know, the overall commentary is that feminism is like this luxury thing for like privileged white women of this era, which is like a common criticism of feminism of like the 70s, right? However, not true, because there were plenty of feminists that were not in that exact demographic at all. But it's just like the idea of Valkyrie is like, oh, let's make fun of this. And then it's like, yeah, but she's so rad. So like,
Joke's on you.
Joke's on you.
I still like the thing.
I took a feminist message out of it anyway. Ha ha. Like, because now I don't like Clint, you know, because Clint is like a jerk about the feminists at the end of the issue. So I was like, you made me not like the person that you love. So that's how that worked out.
It's like, I completely forgot about this. So Marvel was like, hey, you want to create a new character? And I was like, sure, but like, they definitely won't be Wakandan and they won't be a mutant, because there's a lot going on in Wakanda right now. Also, like, there have been enough new characters, but like, it's easy to kind of get lost in the shuffle. Same thing with Krakoa, if Krakoa is even still there. Fall of X, who knows what can happen. So I was like, no, we'll see. Let's go the classic route. But in that, I was like, hey, Nightshade, originally a villain, has been, you know, rehabilitized to be a hero, quote unquote. But something about that character that I always found interesting, and maybe I wasn't supposed to, was the fact that she was so brilliant and everything. But because of the time that she grew up in, and then like they're leaning into the whole blaxploitation thing, is that she's this brilliant teenager who just got caught up in like, hey, Reagan, crack, let's have this character kind of get swept up in like working with drug dealers and stuff like that. Well, actually, this is pre-Reagan. So like, let's have her do that. And I just thought it was, probably shouldn't have been my takeaway, but I was like, well, I mean, you doing this is not too far off from, you know, brilliant people, because they don't have access to the same resources as other folks, getting swept up and using what they have to survive. So that's kind of the way that I saw that character. Also, like, you know, turning Captain America into a werewolf because you just
want to.
It's
funny.
It's amazing. It's funny.
She's
and it's
being
amazing.
Funny.
Like, that's fun.
That's the thing. Once you've seen that cover, you'll remember it for the rest of your life. So, you know, good luck.
Yes.
If I'm not supposed to sympathize with that character, I don't know what y'all were doing, because I do. Because,
like, why, like, turning this white guy? Because also, Steve isn't even. I don't even want to get into like why the Falcon and the Winter Soldier should have kept Steve on. So, because I don't know, like, his story works better when you introduce Johnny Walker. It just works better because that character exists to show you that, you know, it's like, that's not what Steve represents. Like, this is what this suit represents. If somebody who is a terrible person wears a suit, then you're going to have terrible things to happen. But anyway, I was just like, hey.
That's a whole nother interview almost. Because
yeah, that's
I was
a
like,
whole
oh, what do you think about? What do you think about Captain America? Let's go. All right. Yeah, anyway.
Yeah, like, that is another episode, y'all. But Steve, I'm okay with Steve for the most part. Like, he's, you know, he is kind of like Hank Hill to me. Like, Hank tries, right? I believe even now, I think they're supposed to be doing like a revival of the show, but like, Hank is someone that probably might say something inflammatory, but if he learns differently, like by the end of the episode, he's like, oh wait, that is actually Bobby. That's actually really wrong. We shouldn't be doing that.
Right.
So, you know, Hank, the episode where Peggy ends up befriending the drag queen, right?
Yep.
That episode, I actually really love that episode. But even then, you see Hank, as uncomfortable as he is, still like go to bat for that character and support Peggy, support the other character and everything. And just like, yeah.
Because they're people that actually care about their community. Like, that's what you always get from Hank and Peggy. And it's like, that's why it's like, I remember, I've talked to my brother about this. We were raised in like rural Missouri and stuff. So we see like the bad side of a lot of like, anytime somebody's like, hillbillies are good deep down, we're just like, not the ones we know. But it's like, so we have like, you know, a very like kind of cynical edge towards media like that. But I was talking to my brother actually about this show because it was like, why does this work? And it's like, because they care about their community more than they care about their own hangups and bullshit, right? Yeah. Like, they're always like, nobody's mean to Dale's wife, Nancy, right? Like, nobody's really mean to her because she cheats on Dale. Like, everybody knows what's going on with each other, but it's like they're irritated with Dale because Dale's off his rocker, right? Like, he's bonkers. And always doing wild things, but like they still take care of him. And like they, there's this kind of network of care around them. Whereas like, yeah, for a long time, he doesn't even like Luann. And he's like, why is she living with us? And then whenever he's like, no, I will go absolutely to bat with Luann, that's when Hank Hill becomes a good character. Because you're just like, I believe in you now because you're the guy. Like, we hate John Wayne because John Wayne was a Nazi in real life. But like, there's this image of John Wayne as being this person who's like the decent dude, right? And it's like, that doesn't play out in his movies. So that's not real. But you have this image of what that could be. And we love that guy. And like, to me, that's like a lot of what, like, I get what you mean with like Steve, because you're like, this is a guy who in many ways has this immense privilege. And like, he was at one time somebody who was made fun of for being small, but like, that's so far in the past so that he's just a completely different person now. But you're also like, you know what? He is the guy where like, you know, I don't always agree with you, Captain America, but he'll like reach his hand out to you whenever you fall, you know, like that kind of stuff. Yeah. He's like, he's our buddy. And like, he's like, you know, that's what you want from these characters, is like, maybe they don't totally understand things, but they know that it's on them that they don't understand it, right? And I think that that's something that I love about Hank Hill. I love that this just turned into this, because I was like not planning on it, but I'm very excited because that's what's good about it, right? Like, that's why I like King of the Hill.
Listen, King of the Hill is my nightly watch. So it goes between King of the Hill or Bob's Burgers. But it's normally King of the Hill because it's just, it's a comfort show. And like you said, because the show is so about community, at the very end of the day, like, it's just it's a really good time. I think I don't recall what episode I was watching, but like, I got a little teary eyed and I was like, wait, what's happening here?
Am I crying to King of the Hill?
To King of the Hill, but like, it just gets really deep. Like,
them it does, not liking, actually.
Like, because like, Hank not liking Khan has absolutely nothing to do with Khan's ethnicity. It's because Khan is a jackass.
And they're totally different personality types. Like,
there's
a snarkiness in Khan that like, and I don't think Hank can be on. He's like, can't catch up to it, right? He's like, But then when they bond, it's extra sweet. And like, that's
so
that's kind of the thing is like, I think King of the Hill really shows you that, you know, a lot of the people that on paper would be your friends aren't necessarily going to be your friends. But like, the thing too is like, what's more beautiful than the story of him and Bobby and like him just having this kid who isn't like the kid that he thought he was going to be. And like, he still just loves him so much. And the whole point of King of the Hill, over all of its episodes and all of its seasons, is that Hank listens to Bobby because he knows that Bobby's right. Like, that's always the thing eventually that it comes around to, because for a long time, he's like, I need to try to help Bobby be like the person that I want him to be. And eventually it turns into Bobby's already like a better person than I am in a lot of ways. And like, that's a beautiful story. It's like, I mean, Bobby, who's like out here just being so funny and like he loves to dance and like be just kind of out there with himself. And that's so opposite to Hank that he just doesn't even understand it. And then ultimately, you know, this kind of, I mean, I don't know that Bobby is ever going to be like gender nonconforming, but I think that he has elements of that, right?
Yeah, and so I have to agree.
And so it's like the idea of Hank just being like, no, I love you, like, is just beautiful. Like, a lot of us do get that from our parents. A lot of us don't get that from our parents. But even if you do or don't, I just think it's beautiful to watch because it's like, that's what you will love to see from your parents, you know, and that's what your parents will love to see from you, theoretically, is that you become a better person than them.
Because even Cotton has those moments with Bobby.
Yeah, totally.
I think that was probably one of the episodes where I got a little teary-eyed because it was one of those moments that Cotton either had with either Hank, it more than likely was probably Bobby, and I was like, wait, Cotton, you still suck. But
yeah,
you do have the capacity to be a better person. And I think that's the other thing that I really like about that show is that it shows it. Because like at the end of the day, I hate to even say that, but I mean, are there some people that we can absolutely just like cut off? It's just like there is no help, no hope. Absolutely.
Trump. But there's like a few extreme people,
cases.
Right?
Yeah.
Yeah,
but like those are like really extreme cases and oftentimes are few, but there are so many people that reside in the, you can be better and you have the capacity to be better. And I think I just like the reminder from a show like King of the Hill that, again, hopefully through the power of community and like remembering that we are a part of communities, that, you know, the world could be a better place. I mean, hell, like, that's the reason why I wrote Nubian Amazons the way that I did as far as the mascara was concerned, because it's a paradise, sure, but, like, that is subjective. And
yeah,
it's still, like, it's still operated, like, through monarchy. So because it is still operated through that, like, there is still going to be friction there. So regardless of whether it's void of men, like, okay, fine, but all problems are not gone. Are they as dire?
Hippolyta is going to be a dick sometimes. Like,
yes, like it's gonna, and that's, but the, like, that's okay. Like, let's talk about that. Like, let's discover and like explore and see like what that looks like. Because I don't know, like, we're human, so everything is not going to be bubble gum drops. Wow, I've been watching too much Powerpuff Girls. it's not going to be like this sunny, shiny rainbow. And I think that is okay, as long as like we're able to like work through it and be better and hopefully like not have to repeat the same BS over and over and over again because nobody's actually learned anything.
Right. Nobody's listening, right?
Yeah, that's the mom and me coming out.
I just hope that we can come together and have an agreement. Yeah, that's hilarious. It is the mom. And this is at the beginning of the interview. I asked for some mom interaction and I have gotten it and I am happy. I was going to say that my favorite take on Diana, it is The True Amazon by Jill Thompson, because shows her really fucking up, right? Like, she actually causes someone's death by accident, but it's all about her ego. And like, I just loved that because I was like, she's so problematic in this, but we don't get to see her be that often, right? Like, we have this idea of Diana of like, you know, they tried to do that, like, oh no, she's like tough and she'll kill like a super villain or like whatever. But it's like, you see this very moral character who doesn't have like a lot of mistakes, you know, like absolute mistakes. Because killing Maxwell Lord was not a mistake. That was an intentional thing. And it was on purpose and it was good to do because otherwise Superman was going to kill everybody. I don't know what they wanted from her on that front, but but I think that like that was kind of the thing with like watching her be able to fail. And to me, that's going to be the spirit of pretty much any great Wonder Woman / King of the Hill narrative. And because you have people around you who are willing to work with you. And it's like, that's kind of something that I think is what you love to see. It's like why the X-Men often are such a good book, is because you have that kind of network that forms even around somebody like Logan, who in the very beginning is like insufferable in the X-Men comics. Oh, and then slowly, with like Storm repeatedly shocking him every time he's annoying in a meeting, you know, he eventually becomes a actually admirable team player, which I think definitely comes up in the family schnicked. Like you have this guy who's definitely kind of rough around the edges, but he's a family man now, just the same as Scott is. So you kind of, we've seen him change.
Yeah. And I hate to say, well, no, I don't hate to say this. I enjoy saying it, but like, so Hank Hill is kind of like my barometer for when I'm looking at different, really more so male characters in comics. Like, where do they fit on the scale of Hank Hill?
Yeah.
Because again, like, I just think that character, it's just so well done, and really is a great gauge for, well, how involved in the community do you want your character? Because Bruce is also another Hank Hill, and I can't even believe I'm saying that, but like Bruce is.
He is.
We love to joke. We like to joke about him being terrible to, like, you know, beating up on folks who don't have health insurance and sending them to Wayne Hospital. But no, at the very end of the day, like, Bruce is a really solid character, and for the most part, given everything that he's been through, a fairly solid person.
I loved Mariko Tamaki's detective comics because think that Bruce, first of all, she's smart, right? Because she gets rid of Bruce pretty fast. Like, she's like, all right, let's focus on the people who matter. Huntress, like Batwoman.
Yep.
But which is fine. We want to see it. But that's it, is like the Bruce that you see there is someone who, you know, a character dies and he discovers her and he's just like, I'm so sorry. Like, you know, like, you see this man who is all about community, who takes every loss super personally. And, you know, he's great at talking to people. Like, that's something that you just don't see of him enough, is that as much as Dick is great at being nice to people and smoothing things over, Batman's great at connecting with people on this kind of very human level. And whenever writers take him on, I always love to see that from him, right? Because he is kind of that Hank Hill oriented guy who's always eventually going to accept Dick Grayson as his own man, even though it's rocky for a while, right?
Yeah. You know, maybe one day I'm going to pitch a book and it's going to be like, where do these characters, the scale of Hank Hill, and it'll just be this compilation. It'll be another visual encyclopedia of different characters throughout pop culture and where they land on that scale. Because it's just really funny. As a queer Black woman, like, I never would have thought a show like King of the Hill would be one that was so near and dear to me, but like, it is. And it's something that I always have those characters in mind when I'm writing something, because I just think it's just so balanced.
It is, yeah.
I don't know, like, something I strive for even in my own work, because, like, and that's the other thing, like, writing characters doing like stuff that of course you wouldn't do, but like, of course they do, like, that's what they would do, and like trying to remember that and like, oh wait, no, you're not the terrible person. I mean, you might be because you wrote this, but like, this isn't a thing that you personally would do, but
right,
no,
you looked Poison at their Ivy history is, and yeah, made that choice.
Yes.
Now, and you know what, it's hard not to
It's hard not to
agree with Poison Ivy. Like, that is a character where it just gets more relevant with time, where you're just like, you know what? I'm just like obsessed with this lady. I mean, it's like, if this person exists in life, we all just have like the biggest crush on her, because every time she would enter a room, she'd be talking about a botanical science and like saving the world. And it's like, of course we would be so compelled by this person, and it'd be like, yes, sometimes she does plan to kill all humans in the pursuit of that plan. But so do we in our minds sometimes, you know, it's like, that's kind of the thing is sometimes you really do question it, like humans are causing like literally the sixth extinction right now. Like, is that okay? Like, it seems like we have a lot to answer for on that. And of course it's mostly like corporations, but like, that's the thing. There was a whole window of time where we could have shut down a lot of those corporations and we didn't do it. So you have this thing where you're like, I don't know, Pamela, like you could convince me. Like it's, you know, you just, you're like, you're really well dressed. Like you're talking about really smart things. Like I could be convinced.
Yeah. Pollen right now wouldn't be so bad because you would have known that it didn't.
You would have helped.
Yeah, and you would have known it didn't make a lot of sense to plant male trees just simply because of whatever goofy development plan was laid out, and we wouldn't be like,
like all over the dog swaths bed. Of our population wouldn't be dealing with that right now because you would have made sure that everything. I mean, she takes care of like the orphans during, you know, it's like there's just a lot of things where you're like, I don't know. I'm on her side. Like
I even like the kind of right here.
She's right.
You know,
it's like she does these moments where you're like, maybe I can't agree with that, but I do still think you're going in a great direction. So it's like, I can't totally agree with like this outright like murder plan that you have, but like, I don't know. Sometimes you're just killing billionaires that are like literally causing mass pollution. And you're just like, it's a crime that we don't have a punishment for. So like, what, we got to figure something out or she's going to step in. I don't know what to say.
Yeah, I'm just going to look the other way on this one. Because when Poison Ivy came in and got rid of all of my student loan debt, I you wouldn't be able to get me to say a thing about her that was negative.
That's it. Yeah, and Batman's always like, stop being so hot while you're being so good at things. And it's just like, that's how we all feel. We like all are just like, Pamela, stop being so hot for 5 seconds so that we can like have a conversation about this plan that you have. It's just like, nope. She's just going to be hot, zoom right past us, go into the next phase. Like, we're just like, isn't that truly what the life of Harley Quinn is at this point? Is just being like, I don't know about that. God, you're hot. Like, let's make out. And then Pamela's like, all right, we'll take a little break and I'll do my thing and you'll do your thing. And it's like, well, that's, we are all Harley Quinzel once again.
Once again, and actually, that feels like a great way to end the conversation. Is that
it sure does.
At the very end of the day, we are all Dr. Yeah.
We're all just Harley Quinzel with a notebook staring into Pamela Isley's eyes. And you know what? I don't need a better world than that. But
I don't either.
I wish that I had talked to you more about, you know, this most recent book. But the fun thing about, you know, knowing you, having you on the podcast is we're always going to do this again. So,
yes. And to be honest, I mean, listen, dear listeners, you got some nuggets here. Listen, the things that I've written, you can read them at any time. But me talking about things candidly, you're not going to get that because I will not be this you'd on Twitter or anywhere anytime soon. So, thank you so much for another invitation. And I'm hoping if schedules align that for real, when Halloween rolls around, I can come on because I recently been watching, I finally watched It Follows. I know I'm super late.
Well, you're right on time as far as I'm concerned.
Yes. So we can talk about that around then. I finally watched Annabelle, which deep regret because it kept me up for two nights. So I'm making my way slowly down the Conjuring universe. I might not be right by the time October rolls around. So
you know what? Crossed. I just did like a whole Wes Craven marathon. And that's it. It's like, it's not just Halloween anymore. We're just doing it 24/7 with the horror. I have like a Shudder subscription and I've just been clocking through like as many movies as I can.
Because
I'm like, I just deleted everything else. I was like, there's too many streaming services. I end up getting like a choice anxiety and not watching anything. So now I'm like, let's just do Shudder. Watch like a bunch of slashers in a row for months at a time. And then like, you know, we'll be fine.
And we'll be fine. So I am looking forward to that conversation because who knows what I'll watch between now and then, but I can guarantee it'll be a great conversation because Stephanie will be freaked out.
Yes, I love it. I am so excited. And, you know, listeners, go back and listen to the other horror conversations that we've had with Stephanie because they're some of my favorite episodes. We also do them. We've done other ones with Kate Warner, our sound person.
Yeah.
Priya Saxena has been on, I believe, at least one of them. And it's honestly just one of my favorite things to be like, everybody choose a movie. We'll all watch the movie and then we'll talk about the movie. It's
like a
truly
time.
Flawless. And it's like horror is the one for some reason because it's just my favorite genre. And once... It's like almost everybody who I know, even tangentially, just kind of gets drawn into my love for horror at a certain point, even if it's not primarily their thing. Like, I'll just be like, but you should clearly love this movie. Like, The Babadook is for everybody, you know, or something. So it's like very like gateway, you know, like, yeah, just try this one and then we'll move up to the Scream franchise and then we'll be watching Leatherface, you know, like... This is just kind of how it goes. So I'm excited because, you know, I know that you love horror just as much as I do. So it's always something where it's, you know, it gets me excited to talk to people because I'm just like, yes, like you're going to be the same goblin that I am about this.
Oh, guaranteed. I will be a Smeagol by the time October runs around. Trust me. Because like I'm catching up on all kinds of titles that I just didn't watch because either they were getting talked about a lot and it's not that I didn't, I guess I was being like a petty Gemini. I was like, I don't want to watch it right now because everyone's loving it.
Everybody likes it. I don't want to watch it right now. That's how it is sometimes. I don't read weekly X-Men comics because I'm like, I want to talk about it when everybody else is talking about it.
I want to talk about it later, like 4 years later.
When I have time to emotionally process what I'm going through, which is like, I personally need a lot of time with art because I don't very easily disconnect myself from art. So it'll be like, you know, you read something and you're like, I have immediate thoughts. And then you're like, okay, but 3 months are going to pass. And then what am I going to think about it then?
Yeah, because I'm like,
what
I'm
am I going to think 5 years
different.
From now? Yeah, always. It is our prerogative to change our minds. That is for sure. But
yes.
Yeah. Where can you said not so much online these days, but you have plenty of books right now. I don't know that you can list all of them, but get a Marvel Unlimited subscription, first of all, because not only did you do great Unlimited comics, but it honestly is just always fun to read the Unlimited comics. There's been a ton of great creators working on those. So any one you click on, you're probably going to have a good time, in my opinion.
No, you're legit going to have a good time because Infinity Comics truly is where it's at. It's actually surprising how well that format has done for them, but I'm happy that it has. But yes, Marvel Unlimited, I would even say DC Universe Infinite or Infinite, whatever it's called, the DC one, get that. So what's coming out in June, there is Marvel Voices Pride, where my new character, Logan Lewis, a little alliteration there, she'll be getting introduced. And then I wrote a Magic the Gathering story starring Jace and Vraska. So it's a little romance, little swashbuckling romance, which I really enjoy writing at. So that'll be out. Mm-hmm. Actually, both of those come out on the same day, June 14th. So please, if you, you know, could be so kind, either digital or physical, check those two things out. And yeah, more stuff is on the way. What those things are, I don't even know. So we will all find out at the same time. Because you'll write something and then it goes into like revisions or like... In the case of Hasbro and My Little Pony, like they'll look at it and get back to you like 4 months later. So we'll see.
Yeah, that's how it is. Every time I try to end a podcast episode right now, I'm like, well, I'm doing this, I'm doing this, I'm doing this, I'm doing this. And it's just such a big list. At a certain point, you're just like, check out the link tree. Like,
yep.
Just check out that. Or like my website, which I probably need to update way more.
But... yeah, I just updated mine. Yes.
Oh, good. Yes. Good.
Cheese, yes. So if you check my website out, you'll also see those things. And like Twitter, just using it for announcements. So I'll always log on to make an announcement there. Instagram and TikTok, I'm a little bit more active, but also kind of the same because, you know, it's just nice to kind of not be so plugged in.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, but you should be plugged in. It's something you kind of got to do, right? This episode. Yes.
you should listen to this episode, but beyond that. But it's like podcasts are minimal labor on your point. Like you don't have to interact too much. Like you can like holler at us, give us a good rating or something. But for the most part, it's kind of like a passive medium, whereas social media is like, and what do you have to say about this thing that you just found out about 5 seconds ago and have not possibly had time to research?
Yes. I'm like, I'm screaming. I don't know. Please leave me alone. I'm scared. Mom, pick me up.
Mom. Yeah. Okay. Well, we will talk to you again soon, of course. And thank you so much for making the time. Of course, go check out the long title book.
Yes. Check that out. I'll post it and it'll be there.
Yes. Okay, great. I'm so excited to read it because, yeah, we'll probably have you back on right around that time so that we can talk about all of this. Okay. So thank you so much, Stephanie. Thank you so much, listeners of Bitches on Comics. And of course, as I always say, please go back and listen to every other episode with Stephanie. And there will be more links in those as well. But for now, appreciate everybody being here and a goodbye.
Bye.
You're listening to Bitches on Comics, distributed by Realm, your portal to another world. Listen away. Find more shows like Bitches on Comics by following Realm on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or at realm.fm.
Thank you for listening to Bitches on Comics. We are a bi-weekly podcast where we talk to your favorite comics and pop culture creators and critics about what matters to them in comics and pop culture, as you might have guessed. You can follow us on Twitter at @BitchesOnComics and on Instagram at @BitchesOnComics. Our website is, brace yourself, bitchesoncomics.com. If you go there, you can listen to any of our episodes, and we've got other shit that we put on tabs. I don't remember what it is. I am in charge of updating the website, however, so good luck.
Thanks for the heads up. I'll go to this website now.
If you'd like to support the podcast, you can do so by rating and reviewing us on iTunes, Spotify, or Stitcher, or wherever you listen to podcasts.
You can also support the podcast by joining us on Patreon. Head to patreon.com/queerspec to learn more.
I'm Sarah Century, and you can find me at www.sarahcentury.com and Twitter and Instagram. Still Sarah Century on those.
I'm Essie Fleenor. You can learn more about me at essiefleenor.com. You can find me on Twitter and Instagram at @SE_Fleenor.
I'm Monica Estrella Negra, and you can find me at www.audreysrevenge.com or on Twitter at @AudreyRevenge.
Bitches on Comics is recorded by Kate Warner, who plays in the band Church Fire. You can find them at churchfiremusic.com. Our music is recorded by Katie Taylor, who plays as Earth Control Pill. You can find her music at earthcontrolpill.bandcamp.com.
Bitches on Comics is recorded in Denver, Colorado. We want to recognize the indigenous peoples who have inhabited and do inhabit this land. The Arapaho Nation, the Ute Nation, the Cheyenne Nation, and others who have been erased from our history and collective memories through colonization.